Okay, good afternoon and welcome to the San Francisco Planning Commission regular hearing for Thursday, March 13th, 2025. When we reach the item you're interested in speaking to, we ask that you line up on the screen side of the room or to your right. Each speaker will be allowed up to 3 minutes. And when you have 30 seconds remaining, you will hear a chime indicating your time is almost up. When your allotted time is reached, I will announce that your time is up and take the next person queued to speak. There is a very convenient timer on the podium where you can see how much time you have left and watch your time tick down. Please speak clearly and slowly, and if you care to, state your name for the record. I ask that we silence any mobile devices that may sound off during these proceedings. And finally, I will remind members of the public that the Commission does not tolerate any disruption or outbursts of any kind. I'd like to take roll at this time. Commission President So.
Present.
Commission Vice President Moore.
Here.
Commissioner Braun.
Here.
Commissioner Campbell.
Here.
Commissioner Imperial.
Here.
Commissioner McGarry. And Commissioner Williams.
Here.
Thank you, Commissioners. First on your agenda is consideration of items proposed for continuance. Item 1, case number 2025-000426, PCA and MAP for the Alexandria Theater Special Use District Planning Code and Zoning Map Amendments is proposed for continuance to April 3rd, 2025. I have no other items proposed for continuance, so we should take public comment. Members of the public, this is your opportunity to address the Commission on their continuance calendar.
Hi, Commissioners. Good morning. Good afternoon. Angelina Yu, staff with Supervisor Chan's office. Thank you for considering continuance. We're respectfully asking for it to be continued until April 3rd to allow us time to finalize the language and to work with your team. I'm looking forward to seeing you guys again in April.
Thank you. Thank you. Last call for public comment on their continuance calendar. Seeing none, public comment is closed, and your continuance calendar is now before you, Commissioners.
Commissioner Brown.
Move to continue as proposed.
Second.
Thank you, Commissioners. On that motion to continue item 1 to April 3rd, Commissioner Campbell.
Aye.
Commissioner McGarry.
Aye.
Commissioner Williams.
Aye.
Commissioner Braun.
Aye.
Commissioner Imperial.
Aye.
Commissioner Moore.
Aye.
And Commission President So.
Aye.
So move, Commissioners. That motion passes unanimously 7-0, placing us under your consent calendar. All matters listed here under constitute a consent calendar are considered to be routine by the Planning Commission and may be acted upon by a single roll call vote. There will be no separate discussion of these items unless a member of the Commission, the public, or staff so requests, in which event the matter shall be removed from the consent calendar and considered as a separate item at this or a future hearing. Item 2, case number 2023-010016CUA-02 at 3225 Fillmore Street, conditional use authorization. Item 3, case number 2017-015199CUA-02 at 531 Bayshore Boulevard, 405575 Waterloo Street, 610 Marengo Street, and 250 Industrial Street, conditional use authorization. Item 4, case number 2024-00829 DNX-02 at 30 Van Ness Avenue, a downtown project authorization. And item 5, case number 2018-007883PHA-07 at 11 Frida Callaway for the Balboa Reservoir Development Block A, major modifications. I understand, Commissioner Moore, you are requesting to have this item number 5 being pulled off of consent. But so at this time, members of the public, we will entertain any other requests to pull any of the other items off of consent.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. My name is Mark Maloof. I'm a business agent with Teamsters Local 665. As you may be aware, our local union has been heavily involved in autonomous vehicle and fleet charging policy in the city. I am here speaking on item 3.
Okay, sir. Would you like that item to be pulled off of consent?
Yes.
To speak to it? Very good. We will pull that matter off of consent.
Okay. Thank you.
Last call for public comment on the consent calendar, simply to request that an item be pulled off of consent to be considered today. Seeing none, public comment is closed. Commissioners, item 3 and 5 will be pulled off of consent and heard later today. I believe, Commissioner Campbell, you have a disclosure on item 4.
Yes, I'd actually like to be recused from item number 4. My employer is Gensler, and we were actually a part of the 30 Van Ness project. So I think there is, it's
there
best
a motion
that I be
to
recused.
Recuse Commissioner Campbell from item 4.
Secretary Iona, Commissioner Imperial's monitor does not work. She cannot press her name.
Or request to speak.
Way of saying it. Or it might show up but appear blank in the order.
It should be blank for the day. Request to speak it, that's it.
Just not sure. I don't know if I can. That's beyond my IT capabilities.
But she does show up as a blank, so if you see a blank name.
Okay. If someone actually queue up, then I will see as a blank.
Okay.
So it's blank, or did you hit the button?
I'll always be behind her.
Apologies for the technical difficulties, Commissioner Imperial. I'll notify Media Services that your monitor has some issues associated with it. But at this time, it's beyond my capabilities to fix.
You just, you know.
I'll raise my hand.
Yes. No. The low tap way. So, Commissioner Brown?
Move to recuse Commissioner Campbell from item 4.
Second.
Thank you, Commissioners. On that motion to recuse Commissioner Campbell from item 4, Commissioner Campbell?
Aye.
Commissioner McGarry?
Aye.
Commissioner Williams?
Aye.
Commissioner Braun?
Aye.
Commissioner Imperial?
Aye.
Commissioner Moore?
Aye.
And Commission President So?
Aye.
So move, Commissioners. Commissioner Campbell, you are hereby recused from item 4. If we could take up that matter first to get that out of the way.
Okay. Commissioner Imperial?
Move to recuse Commissioner Campbell for item number 4.
Commissioner Campbell's already been recused. It's just a matter of approving it on consent or not.
Move to approve items number 2
and 4.
If we could take up item 4 first, that Commissioner Campbell can then
move to approve item number 4.
Thank you, Commissioner Imperial.
Second.
Thank you, Commissioner Braun. On that motion to approve item 4 on consent, Commissioner McGarry?
Aye.
Commissioner Williams?
Aye.
Commissioner Braun?
Aye.
Commissioner Imperial? Commissioner Moore?
Aye.
And Commission President So?
Aye.
So move, Commissioners. That motion passes unanimously 6-0, leaving item 2 on consent.
Commissioner Braun?
Move to approve item 2.
Second.
Thank you, Commissioners. On that motion to approve item 2 for Fillmore Street on consent, Commissioner Campbell?
Aye.
Commissioner McGarry? Commissioner Williams?
Aye.
Commissioner Braun?
Aye.
Commissioner Imperial?
Aye.
Commissioner Moore?
Aye.
And Commission President So?
Aye.
So move, Commissioners. That motion passes unanimously 7-0. Commissioners, that'll place us under Commission Matters for item 6, the land acknowledgement.
The Commission acknowledges that we are on the unceded ancestral homeland of the Ramaytu Shalone, who are the original inhabitants of San Francisco Peninsula. As the indigenous stewards of this land and in accordance with their traditions, the Ramaytu Shalone have never ceded, lost, nor forgotten their responsibilities as the caretakers of this place, as well as for all peoples who reside in their territorial territory. As guests, we recognize that we benefit from living and working on their traditional homeland. We wish to pay our respects by acknowledging the ancestors, elders, and relatives of the Ramaytu Shalone community and by affirming their sovereign rights as First Peoples.
Thank you. Item 7, consideration of adoption draft minutes for February 27, 2025. Members of the public, this is your opportunity to address the Commission on their minutes. Seeing none, public comment is closed. And Commissioners, there was a correction on your minutes that unfortunately I don't have in front of me, but it was the correction to Commissioner Braun pointed out very astutely. The continuance of items 1A and B is, and the vote. So that has been corrected. So we'll be acting on the corrected version. Do I hear a motion, commissioners?
Commissioner Braun?
With that correction, move to approve.
Second.
Thank you, commissioners. On that motion to adopt the minutes as corrected, Commissioner Campbell?
Aye.
Excuse me, Commissioner McGarry?
Aye.
Commissioner Williams?
Aye.
Commissioner Braun?
Aye.
Commissioner Imperial?
Aye.
Commissioner Moore?
Aye.
And Commissioner President So?
Aye.
So move, commissioners. That motion passes unanimously 7-0. Item 8, commission comments and questions. Seeing none, commissioners, this will be a very, very short hearing. Department matters, item 9, director's announcements. Excellent. Item 10, review of past events at the Board of Supervisors, Board of Appeals. I have no report from the Historic Preservation Commission as they did not meet yesterday.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Aaron Starr, Manager of Legislative Affairs. At the Land Use Committee this week, the committee considered the mayor's ordinance that would amend the planning code, zoning map, and general plan to remove the two-thirds requirement for office development in the Central SoMa plan area. This item was continued from last week's hearing so that the commission's proposed modifications could be drafted and added to the ordinance. As the committee discussed the bulk of this ordinance last week, this was a relatively short item. Supervisor Dorsey, the co-sponsor, introduced the amendments that aligned with the commission's recommended modifications. These were to limit projects to 600 feet in height and require certain community amenities on key sites. Two public commenters spoke to reiterate their support for these amendments. They also expressed appreciation to the planning department and sponsors for retaining the community benefits on key sites. There was no discussion from the committee. The ordinances were then unanimously forwarded to the full board with a positive recommendation. Next on the agenda was an ordinance sponsored by the mayor that would amend the planning code to allow hotels and motels to be used as interim housing without abandoning or discontinuing their land use designation. Commissioners, you heard this item on December 12th of last year and adopted a recommendation for approval. Your approval came with the acknowledgement that the ordinance would be amended to require relocation efforts for when these interim housing units were reverted back to hotels. Supervisor Dorsey joined the committee and expressed concern related to the loss of hotel jobs and tourist hotels. He also noted that shelter-in-place hotel suffered considerable damage during the pandemic. HSH's Deputy Director Emily Cohen made a presentation on the item. In addition to the amendments related to relocation efforts, she also shared the following amendments. The first was to include new findings related to the continued support for participants and non-interference with unionized staff. The second was amend the ordinance to only apply to the Civic Center Motor Inn located at 364 9th Street. This inn will serve as a sober independent living transitional housing pilot program. Three, clarify this program is intended for sites that operate as hotels and motels as of April 1st of this year and not intended for sites that have abandoned their hotel motel status in the past. And four, authorize reestablishment of hotel use for hotels that operated as shelter-in-place or SIP hotels during the pandemic and were still operating as interim housing on January 1st of this year. This last amendment would need to be referred back to the Planning Commission. There were more than a dozen comments in support of the proposed ordinance. Most came from those that currently reside in or recently graduated from the Sober Living Transitional Housing Programs. After closing public comment, Chair Melgar moved to amend the file with all but the SIP hotel amendments and continue the item to next week. The chair then noted that she intended to duplicate the amended file next week and add the SIP hotel amendments that requires re-referral back to the Planning Commission. And there were no planning department items at the full board this week. In closing, I just wanted to acknowledge that Monday is St. Patrick's Day. Some of you may celebrate with a pint or two. So I wanted to share a bit of Irish history to contemplate while you're enjoying your drink. Don't worry, I promise this won't be long, unlike most of Irish history. Ireland has two official symbols, the shamrock and the harp. We're all familiar with the shamrock. It's widely associated with St. Patrick and Irish identity. However, the harp holds a unique place as the country's official emblem. Just as the U.S. uses the eagle on government seals, Ireland uses the harp, a tradition that dates back centuries. Since 13th century, the harp has been a heraldic symbol of Ireland, representing the nation's deep connection to music. In medieval times, harpists played for chieftains, and the instrument became central to Irish culture. Even outsiders took note. In 1185, Prince John, later King John of England, visited Ireland and gave the Irish this rather backhanded compliment. The only thing to which I find that this people apply a commendable industry is playing upon musical instruments. They are incomparably more skillful than any other nation I've ever seen. Scotland and Wales strive to rival Ireland in the art of music. So when the Irish Free State was established in 1922, it made sense to adopt the harp as the national emblem. But there's one small problem. Guinness had already trademarked the harp 50 years earlier. The solution? A simple but symbolic one. And SFGov, if I could have the... the Irish government simply flipped the harp, allowing both the country and its most famous beer to share this historic icon. So on Monday, when you raise your glass, take a moment to admire the harp and everything it represents. Sláinte.
Thank you for that, Mr. Starr. Is there any report from the Board of Appeals? No? So no report from the Board of Appeals. Very good. Commissioners, that will place us under general public comment at this time. Members of the public may address the commission on items of interest to the public that are within the subject matter jurisdiction of the commission, except agenda items. With respect to agenda items, your opportunity to address the commission will be afforded when the item is reached in the meeting. When the number of speakers exceed the 15-minute limit, general public comment may be moved to the end of the agenda.
Hi, Georgia Shudish. I don't know how I can follow that. I sent a couple of emails about examples with flats. I sent one on the 23rd of February and one on the 2nd of March, and I also sent one earlier this week. And they were flats that were extensively remodeled and from the stacked flat layout that's usually associated with flats. That's part of why you did the flat policy. They were all reconfigured. The March 2nd email showed that sliding door, and it actually had a total interior demolition of 73.64%. Anyway, I want to show a couple more examples that are under review. If I could have the overhead, please. Okay, so I can't make this zoom out, but, oh, there it is, sort of. Oh, great. Okay, so this is one that's happening now, and that's the original, and this is what they're doing. And it's odd because they're putting one flat in the middle and the other flat is wrapping around it, kind of like a candy with the insides. And they've also expanded the, made an interior foyer front, expanding the vestibule. So it just doesn't really make sense to me. It's kind of an odd thing. The other one that's under review is, and that's just sold in for $800,000 or something, and the permit's only worth $450,000. Okay, so here's the other one. And originally they wanted to take advantage of 317B7, which is to put the unit behind the garage and have three floors upstairs, and that's kind of why you did the flat policy to prevent that. So what they're doing is they have the lower flat now, was full flat before, they're going to have this huge kitchen area and a bedroom, one bedroom. And here's the big stairway to the upper flat. And what they're doing is, here's the upper flat, and that's the kitchen, that little thing there. But in the first plan, when they were doing 317B7, that was going to be a closet. But this thing that's odd to me about this, that makes no sense, is that's the little kitchen, and the staff did make them put in a four-burner stove, but I've seen that before. One of those examples I sent in February had a kitchen in the closet. There's the dining room. So here's your kitchen. You go all the way down there to the dining room. That doesn't make sense to me. I mean, I don't mean to be pissy, to put it bluntly, but that does not make sense to me. That's illogical. That's no common sense. So, and as I said, there was the closet there. So that's my point. I think that as I wrote a letter to Ms. Tanner this morning, and I hear copies for you, along with my 150 words for the minutes, with suggestions of how the policy should be codified, because that's the critical thing. What language the staff's going to come up with, and I don't know what they're coming up with, but I made some suggestions in this copy of the letter for you that I sent to Ms. Tanner and the rest of the staff. And that's that. Thank you. Have a happy St. Patrick's Day. Enjoy your Guinness and your corned beef. Thank you.
Okay, last call for general public comment.
Hello, commissioners. Thank you for being here. My name is Masako Takahashi. My family has had businesses and our buildings here in the city for since after World War II. We were friends of Ruth Asawa and her family, and I'm here to urge you to please look into what's happening on Osaka Way, sometimes called Buchanan Mall. It was designed by Ruth Asawa and urban designer Rai Okamoto back in the 70s, and it was supposed to demarcate Japantown, which has, as you all know, been pretty much razed and redeveloped and so on. And it is the last vestige and anchor point for Japantown. And it's been a successful endeavor, even through COVID, as you also may know. But right now, what started to be a project to fix the fountains, which haven't worked in, I think, over 20 years, unfortunately, and to flatten the bumpy cobblestones so they'd be wheelchair accessible, has turned into this giant project to redesign the mall. And to me, that destroys the artwork of world-famous Ruth Asawa, who is going to have a show, as you may know, here at San Francisco MoMA. And if you Google who is the most famous artist from San Francisco, you get number one, Ruth Asawa. Anyway, I wonder if you can, I didn't know I could do this, but that is the plan the city showed us last month for what they intend to do instead of the beautiful benches that she created, which are portable, so they could be just moved the next time the plumbing has to be done, and replace it with six of these, as they describe them, peanut-shaped cement planter boxes, benches, which they will plant trees and bushes in, and as you can see, do not have any Japanese touches or flourishes. You know, when you go to Chinatown, you know you're in Chinatown because of the architectural flourishes that you see immediately. Well, in Japantown, this is the only thing that's left. The pagoda and this were mandated by the city to do that for Japantown. And this design, as you can see, the cement plane, cement benches, immovable the next time anything happens with the plumbing, by the way, and then another 20-something years maybe to get them on the ticket. Anyway, they have been okayed for a national monument for historic, excuse my, I'm so nervous, I've never done this before, historic monument status. So they're okay for that. But, you know, it's in the Public Works Department or something. It may have eluded your attention that it's about to be dug up and these cement benches put in, instead of what I'm asking, please consider restoration and renaming to
Thank
Ruth
you,
Asawa
ma'am.
Way.
That is your time.
Thank you.
Nice to see you again. Claire Mills from District 2. Thank you for the opportunity to speak at a recent Planning Commission in support of REP's efforts to protect tenants from displacement due to blanket upzoning. This isn't staying up, sorry. I truly appreciate your collaboration on this critical issue. At the meeting, you and I were both surprised to learn that the San Francisco Planning Commissioners were unaware of the state's officially updated population projections. Released by the California Department of Finance in 2024, September. These figures show that by 2030, San Francisco's population is projected to grow by 2,683 people, yet we're being forced to plan for 82,069 new units. This mismatch is alarming. The RENA process is based on state projections, yet despite this update, neither San Francisco Planning nor our elected officials have called for a reassessment of these inflated housing mandates. Meanwhile, other cities are pushing back, and I urge you to watch the recent SANDAG mayor's discussion, particularly at minute 45, where Mayor Huebner raises critical conditions or questions about the rigidity of the RENA allocations. The email I sent you dated March 10th, this is a copy, has a link to the SANDAG video. It's on YouTube. Also attached are the State Department of Finance's population projection numbers. So you can see every city in California. So San Francisco must act now. We need leadership to negotiate with HCD to acknowledge the 55,000 units already in the pipeline that they have. They are applying towards our mandate. Those units are more than sufficient to meet the projected demand of 2,683 new residents by 2030. I hope that math makes sense. Thus avoiding the harmful consequences of builder's remedy. This would prevent overdevelopment that does not serve San Franciscans, nor does it really improve affordable housing numbers, and would override much of your authority as commissioners. Other cities are demanding a more rational and fair RENA process. San Francisco should do the same. As Mayor Huebner says in the video, RENA should be a planning process with flexibility, not a punitive mandate, as it had been in the past. I'm here today to ask you to please consider sending someone to ABAG to present the need to negotiate with HCD to adjust the requirements on the updated population projections by the State of Finance released just last September. San Francisco and all Bay Area cities need to speak up for the same request. Let's stand together in demanding a housing policy that reflects reality, the actual numbers, the census data, and supports communities and protects residents. Thank you.
Okay, final last call for public comment, general public comment. Seeing none, general public comment is closed. Commissioners, we can move on now to the items pulled off of consent. We'll take up item 3 for case number 2017-015199-CUA-02 for the property at 531 okay. Bayshore Boulevard.
Excuse,
40.
Excuse me, Jonas. Commissioner Williams had a comment.
Oh. Anyone?
Thank you. This is for Director Hillis. Couple of questions I think deserve a little bit more insight, if you have any. One on the Japantown. Do we have? I mean, I know that's not in plan. It seems like that may be out of planning's jurisdiction, but what do you have any more insight on that?
I mean, there's definitely a project happening, and we can we're happy to talk to the member of the public who spoke here today and connect them with the right folks. We're involved, but a bit tangentially, but recognize the concerns. Happy to connect on that.
Okay.
So if you send me an email, rich.hillis@sfgov.org, we'll
be happy to send you each a copy of an email with photos of what it looks like.
Thank you, ma'am.
Great.
Thank you, ma'am.
Yep. And we will
thank
yep,
you for that.
Thank you.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Mr. Hillis. Also, in regards to the issue that the woman just sent regarding the email with the census calculations, populations, is that something that you know planning has took up? Is that something that's you know, in your guys' wheel well as far as reaching out to HCD? And
I mean, we're certainly aware of it, but mm-hmm. HCD nor the state nor ABAG has changed our required RENA numbers. I mean, that's in effect. Our housing element's in effect. The laws around RENA are in effect. So, you know, certainly our legislature, the governor, can make changes to that, but we're still under our housing element mandate in the RENA mm-hmm. numbers that were set by ABAC.
Right. Now, I get that. It just seems like other jurisdictions around the state have been pushing back. You know, these numbers could be excessively high, which I agree with that they're a little bit high for San Francisco regarding 82,000 units. that are required for us to produce. I mean, so anyway, I'm just putting it out there.
Sure. And we certainly have representatives. You know, the mayor's got representatives on ABAG. So does the Board of Supervisors. It's probably the place that should be discussed. We can certainly talk about it when, you know, we have an item around rezoning that's calendared here.
Okay. I think it's just worth noting and being aware of it. Thank you.
All right, commissioners, if there's nothing further, we can move on to the items pulled off of consent. Again, item 3, case number 2017-015199-CUA-02 at 531 Bayshore Boulevard, 4055-75 Waterloo Street, 6 and 10 Marengo Street, and 250 Industrial Street. Conditional use authorization.
Good afternoon, commissioners. President Zoe, Gabriela Pantoja of department staff. The item before you today is to maintain an existing temporary private parking lot for a time period not to exceed 8 years, pursuant to Planning Code Sections 210.3, 249.65, and 303. The temporary parking lot is located at 531 Bayshore and et cetera addresses, which are bounded by Waterloo to the north, Loomis Street to the east, Industrial Street to the south, and Bayshore to the west. It contains approximately 150 parking spaces. In March of 2018, the commission issued a motion to establish the temporary parking lot not to exceed a time period of 3 years for Yellow Cab. At the time, Yellow Cab had recently been displaced from within the city and was looking for a new location, kind of pretty desperately. And so this location was established and as a temporary parking lot. Yellow Cab seeks to continue using this temporary parking lot, and like I said, only for an extended period of 8 years and nothing more. The department recommends approval and finds the project is on balance and consistent with the Bayshore 100 Points Area Plan and General Plan for the following reasons. The project will maintain an existing private parking lot to be used by Yellow Cab, which serves the transportation needs of the city's residents. The project will maintain a business and job opportunities within the city and for its residents. And the project will maintain a land use that is compatible with the PDR2 zoning district and for a period of 8 years and provides the opportunity for future development of the site as it is a surface parking lot. This concludes staff's presentation. I'm available for any questions, and the project sponsor does have a presentation for y'all. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, project sponsor, you have 5 minutes.
Good afternoon, Tuya Catalano with Rubin, Junius & Rose, representing the project sponsor. So we have not been contacted by the Teamsters ahead of this hearing, but we certainly would have been happy to discuss with them with any concerns they may have. What we're here asking today is a conditional use for temporary private parking lot for Yellow Cab. It's not a new use. It's a continuation of their existing use that was approved by this commission unanimously in 2018. The use has changed very slightly since 2018. The fleet size back then was approximately 600 cabs. Now it's about 300 cabs. And our initial conditional use also included two lots along Loomis Street. Now those lots are no longer part of the proposal. So it's a slightly smaller site that accommodates about 150 vehicles versus 266 as originally approved by the commission in 2018. Otherwise, everything else is the same. Yellow Cab installed the perimeter fencing on the site back in 2018 and complied with those requirements. We don't need to do any additional improvements to the site since it's already in existing use. What I'm assuming is that, let me go back. Parking lot specifically, the private parking lot, by definition under Section 102 of the Planning Code, is a use that provides for off-street parking for automobiles. It's a defined use. I assume that Teamsters may have been focusing on fleet charging use or a parcel delivery service use. Those are two very distinct uses, and they're not the same as private parking lot use. Fleet charging is a use by autonomous vehicles, and it's not permitted as part of a parking lot use, as an accessory use. Same goes for parcel delivery service. It's not allowed as an accessory use to to a private parking lot use. So these are three very different uses under the planning code, and if you were to go from one use to another, you need to do a change of use. At minimum, you need to do a building permit to change from one use to another. So what we're asking here today is a private parking lot use. We're not asking for fleet charging use. We're not asking for a parcel delivery use. So I think I'm going to keep it very brief and just emphasize that what we're asking is a continuation to allow Yellow Cab to have a place where they can park their vehicles. This is an ideal location for their vehicles. It's an existing vacant park. It was an existing vacant parking lot before we came in 2018. It's right next to 101 and 280. The street, Marengo Street, that cuts through it. It prevents any kind of queuing along the other streets. So it's an ideal location, and since it's an existing use and continuation of that existing use, they already have a proven track record of it not impacting the neighborhood. So I firmly believe there's no need or justification to object to Yellow Cab's conditional use request for the private parking lot on the basis of fleet charging or parcel delivery service concerns, because that's not what we're asking. I'm very happy to answer any questions you may have, so I'll conclude there, but happy to come back if you have any questions. Thank you so much.
Okay, with that, we should open up public comment. Members of the public, this is your opportunity to address the commission on this item.
Good afternoon, commissioners. We understand today that this item is to grant conditional use approval to extend the use at the subject property for a private parking lot use. As the commission is aware, in the past, users of private parking lots utilized a loophole in the planning code to convert private parking lots to a fleet charging use without going through a separate conditional use approval process for fleet charging. Over a year ago, the Board of Supervisors adopted legislation that closed the loophole, and now any private parking lot use in the PDR2 zoning that seeks in the future to convert to a fleet charging use must go through a separate conditional use approval. We would like to take this opportunity to communicate to the Commission clearly that the conditional use approval in front of you today is only for an extension of a private parking lot use and not for fleet charging, which would require a separate conditional use approval and would not be use that we support. We urge the Commission and planning staff to ensure that all applicants for private parking lot uses in the PDR2 be made aware that they no longer can convert the use from private parking lot to fleet charging without going through a separate conditional use process. Thank you.
Okay, last call for public comment on this matter. Seeing none, public comment is closed, and this matter is now before you, commissioners.
Commissioner Brown.
Yes, I appreciate the comments about the changes in the process for fleet charging uses. This is a site that I pass by somewhat regularly on the 24, or even, as weird as it sounds, on foot, and it's a very visible site. I see no signs of fleet charging. I see Yellow Cab vehicles parked there. I have no concerns about queuing or traffic. I've never experienced any issues like that, and I move to approve.
There's nothing further, commissioners. There is a motion that has been seconded to approve with conditions. On that motion, Commissioner Campbell?
Aye.
Commissioner McGarry?
Aye.
Commissioner Williams?
Aye.
Commissioner Braun?
Aye.
Commissioner Imperial?
Aye.
Commissioner Moore?
Aye.
Commissioner and Commission President So?
Aye.
So move, commissioners. That motion passes unanimously 7-0, placing us on item 5 for case number 2018-007883. PHA-0711 Frida Calloway for the Balboa Reservoir Development Block A. These are for major modifications.
Good afternoon, President So, fellow commissioners, Jeff Horn, Planning Department staff. Currently are being passed out hard copies of an updated executive summary and motion that were provided to the commission earlier this morning, as well as hard copies of a presentation prepared by staff, as well as a project sponsor to help with readability. I'm also joined today by Jonathan Cherry, who manages the implementation of the Balboa Reservoir DA project for the Office of Economic and Workforce Development. Thank you. The item before you today is a request for major modifications to four design standards of the Balboa Reservoir Design Standards and Guidelines and Special Use District within the Planning Code. This project site is located in the Balboa Park neighborhood. It's currently part of San Francisco City College. To the north is Reardon High School. To the west is the Westwood Park neighborhood. And to the south is the Ocean Avenue Commercial District. Summarize a history of the development for this project. In May 28th of 2020, the project received Planning Commission approval for their development agreement and associated case records, general plan amendment, zoning change, the design standards and guidelines, and the environmental impact report. All of this was certified by the Board of Supervisors in August of 2020. As part of, or as a requirement of the DA project, the phase one applications came approved in October of 2021. The department approved the phase one, which included blocks B, C, D, E, and F. The sponsor later received funding opportunities for this block, Block A, being heard today. So came back to the department in June of 2024 to amend that phase one approval to include Block A, as well as Block H, which is part of the townhomes development. And since 2022, planning department staff has been reviewing these development review applications. I'll now turn things over to Jonathan quickly.
Thank you, Jeff. Hello, Commissioners. Jonathan Cherry, Project Manager with OEWD. So we're here to talk about a specific building, but since it has been a while since this project has been before the Commission and the Commission approved the project, we appreciate the opportunity to provide a refresher about all the work and community conversations that have taken place over the years to shape the plan and to share a big picture update on the status of implementation. So the 17-acre project site that you see here was previously owned by the SFPUC and was a portion of what was partially constructed in the 1950s with the intent of becoming a reservoir. The site was never used for water storage, and after several different uses over the decades, the Balboa Park Station Area Plan, adopted in 2009, envisioned this as an opportunity site for housing. In 2014, the site was one of the properties identified as part of the Public Land for Housing Program, which was a multi-agency effort focused on several underutilized sites throughout the city to develop a vision for future uses and optimizing the public benefits from those sites. Planning for this version of the project began in 2014, and the Balboa Reservoir Community Advisory Committee was established by the Board of Supervisors in 2015. Over the course of 16 CAC meetings in 2015 and 2016, development parameters, including an affordable housing target of at least 50%, were established for the future use of this site and incorporated into a developer RFQ that the SFPUC issued in late 2016. Following additional community engagement and a selection process, the partnership led by Bridge Housing and Avalon Bay was selected as the developer team in 2017. The overall plan for the project, along with the design standards and guidelines, the development agreement, were refined over the subsequent 2 years and in parallel with ongoing CAC meetings, and as Jeff mentioned, were approved by the Commission and the Board in 2020. In 2021 and 2022, detailed design got underway, and the conveyance of the SFPUC parcel was completed to Bridge Housing at the end of 2022. During that same time period, The project team, along with the Mayor's Office of Housing, successfully applied for three significant state grants that you'll hear more about to support the project's affordable housing and infrastructure, and those funds are a big part of what has brought us here today to talk about the project moving forward and specifically about the 100% affordable building at Building A. So here's the overall site plan. The orientation north is to the right on this image. You can see the seven multifamily buildings that form the projects, and then the massing of the project steps down to lower scale townhomes along the project's boundary with the Westwood Park neighborhood. Overall, the project will include 1,100 residential units, 50% market rate, 50% affordable. Looking at the image, so A, B, E, and F are the affordable buildings, and then the other three, D, C, G, and the townhomes are market rate. So the project's street and open space network is designed to provide new pedestrian and bike linkages with pedestrian paseos, allowing access across the site in both directions, including to City College's new West Campus buildings that are under construction at the bottom of the slide here. The extension of Lee Avenue, starting at Ocean Avenue, has been renamed Mayor Edwin M. Lee Avenue by the Board of Supervisors, mm-hmm. and will be a new tree-lined bike boulevard with protected bike lanes on both sides that will provide a new bicycle link across Ocean Avenue to City College and beyond. Here you can see within the red dashed line the approved phase one of the project that Jeff described, with the three initial construction scopes of work called out. Beginning this summer, we anticipate that construction will begin on the overall grading of the site and the work on all of the new public streets and infrastructure. Starting soon after that, we'll be building E, 128 units of affordable housing along with a community room. And then the second building that we expect to get underway early next year is Building A with 159 affordable units, and that is the building you'll be hearing more about today. As I mentioned earlier, all of this work is supported by those state funding awards. It's a big priority for the Mayor's Office of Housing, who we're working closely with on project implementation. Before I pass things back to Jeff, I just want to mention that all the other buildings that you see within the red dashed line have already completed the design review process. So Building A is the last one. As Jeff mentioned, it was added to the first phase last year when it became clear it was ready to move forward. And I'll just share a view of those buildings. So these are the ones that have completed design reviews. So the market rate housing in Block C and D, the Block F educator housing, the townhomes, and Block E, which, as I mentioned, will be the first building under construction later this fall. So that brings us back to design review process for Building A, and I'll let Jeff continue with the details. Thank you.
Thank you, Jonathan. Again, Jeff Warren, Planning Department staff. the project before you today is a six-story, 159-unit, 100% affordable housing building. The project provides a mix of dwelling units. Include 41 three-bedroom units, 40 two-bedroom units, 64 one-bedroom units, and 14 studios. The project also includes amenities such as a community room, teen room, barbecue terrace, and a courtyard with play area. The project will have on-site parking for 78 vehicles, 30 of which will be available to the public. So design approval is required within this DA for all building permits or all projects before they're allowed to submit their building permits. there's also a process established for projects that are seeking modifications from the design standards and guidelines or the SUD code. There's two tiers within the Balboa Reservoir SUD. deviations of less than 10% are considered minor modifications. Deviations greater than 10% are major modifications. Any major modification is required to be approved by the Planning Commission. And when any project has at least one major modification going to the Planning Commission, all modifications shall be considered modifications and be before the planning, or be considered major modifications and be before the Commission for review and approval. Today, the building at Block A is seeking major modifications for four development standards and guidelines. These include openings to interior courtyards, minimum height of the ground floor, entries at ground floor units, and planning code section 24.90, the off-street loading section. To quickly or to present the request to the commission. So the first request is for opening to the interior of courtyards. DSG 7.7.2 requires that openings to internal courtyards have a minimum clear width of 20 feet and a height of 18 feet. The courtyard design within this project does not meet that 18-foot requirement, but rather provides a 16-foot tall courtyard height when measured from the front setback. The project does provide a 24.5-foot wide or width to the opening, which exceeds the minimum requirement. So although the standard is not met, the project feels or is intending to meet the goal by providing an open area that is effectively equal to what those minimum standards are. The courtyard does contain, or the opening does contain the courtyard at the bottom portion, which is allowed within the design standards. The next request is for the standards for minimum height at the ground floor. Along the Lee Avenue frontage, the project has an exterior height of 14 feet for the for that ground floor and interior heights of 12 feet. The standard requires a 15-foot height from floor to floor. excuse me. And then, so that's on Lee Avenue. I would note that the lot is split level, so there's actually another three frontages of ground floor height along South Street, the Paseo, and the PUC, and the project complies with the standard for those three frontages. Next request is for entries to ground floor units. The standard here requires that any ground floor unit that does not have at least 2 feet of a raised entry should provide a recess of 8 feet from the front door of these units to the front property line to provide additional space to activate the fronts of these buildings. There are three specific units at the ground floor along the Paseo that do not have the 2 foot of height to be considered as raised entrances, so therefore required to provide 8 foot setbacks of the door from the property line. The modification is requesting to only have a 7.5 foot recess. The sponsor has looked into this and feels that the area in front still provides stoops that are large enough to activate these ground floor units while providing some additional internal square footage to provide a better or higher quality units and layouts. And the final request is to a section of the SUD, which requires an off-street loading space for this project. The specific language of the SUD states that any building with over 100,000 square feet of residential square footage, as well as an off-street parking garage, should also provide a loading dock. this project has both of those characteristics, and they're technically required to provide a loading dock. The project sponsor is seeking to meet loading through on-street loading opportunities in lieu of providing that off-street loading dock within the building. This first exhibit kind of shows the lowest level of the building, which does have limited frontage on what was South Street, now Wisteria Lane. So the majority of this frontage is already being occupied by mechanical and building services, the parking garage entrance, and a trash room. Circled on the left side is one 3-bedroom unit, which may be the only location that a loading dock could have been accommodated, thus with the potential for losing a unit if the standard was met. Just to further reiterate the existing or the proposed the uses at the ground floor and the limited availability for area to occupy a loading dock. So this ground floor, this elevation of the south of the north side of the building is showing the kind of limitations of where the building actually is at street grade, where you would logically be able to have a curb gut to accommodate a loading dock. Again, a lot of the building's proposing to include their mechanical and services, as well as there's that one dwelling unit at the corner. And another note on Lee Avenue as an alternative. Lee Avenue is proposed to have a protected bike lane, which would not be a suitable interaction to introduce a curb cut and loading on that frontage. And this final exhibit shows the on-street loading opportunities as proposed. You can see in the peach, we have areas dedicated to commercial and accessible loading, which can accommodate the intent of the loading dock standard. So thank you. This concludes staff's presentation. Staff supports these requested modifications. We think they help provide flexibility in design for this building to be able to provide these 159 affordable housing units. This concludes staff's presentation. We're available for any questions.
Thank you for that. Members of the public, this is your opportunity to address the commission on this matter. You need to come forward.
Thank you. I'm Bradley Sugarman. I'm studio director at YA Studio. We're architects for Balboa A in collaboration with BAR Architects. I'm really proud to be working with Bridge Housing on this affordable housing project, supporting 159 units of affordable housing. If we could go to the first slide. I don't know, is it being shown? Okay. So as Jeff and Jonathan mentioned, we have the overall site. The Balboa A project is the one we're discussing, which is closer to Ocean Avenue along the main access street off of that Lee Avenue, and then Balboa Reservoir Block E. Further toward the north is going to be built first, along with the infrastructure and streets that are highlighted on the plan above. Next slide, we've got, we just wanted to show that we've done several community meetings with the community, had several meetings with the community. So this is just showing our last most recent community meeting where we, showed the project, showed what we were doing, and had some good dialogue with the community and responded to their requests. To be a little more specific about the project, the next slide is just showing the view of the corner at Lee Avenue and SFPUC open space. You come in along Lee Avenue, you can see the community spaces activating the corner along Lee Avenue, as well as kind of stronger materiality along Lee Avenue, which announced the entry to the site. The next view is at the corner of Lee Avenue and Wisteria Lane, which is our main entry corner, which is another requirement of the DSG that the entry happens along Lee Avenue and Wisteria Lane. So you can see you enter that corner and then you go around and you actually enter the building through the opening to the courtyard that we had looked at previously. And you can see down Wisteria Lane, we've got a couple of units activating the street, and we're trying to activate Wisteria Lane as much as possible, but down further along Wisteria Lane is where we have all the utilities, trash entry, as well as a unit at the corner. Next slide just shows a detailed view of the entry with bicycle storage activating that corner as well. You come in to the project, and then you enter into the middle of the building from that corner. The proposed modifications, the first one is the reduction of the courtyard opening height from 18 feet to 16 feet. We feel like we're meeting the intent of the guidelines here by providing, for one thing, the primary building circulation entry is through that opening. So you come in from the corner, you come up, it's all exterior. You see into from Lee Avenue all the way through into that courtyard. Everyone who is part of the community goes in through that passage. The opening width is 24 and a half feet, which is wider than the minimum standard. Therefore, you know, even though we have a shorter height at 16 feet, we still have a greater amount of total area. The reason why we're doing that is we're trying to balance. We have a sloping site from one corner to the other, and we're really trying to balance the elevations of the garage level, the second level, and the third levels to something that's reasonable. And by doing that, addressing the slope nature of the site, we feel like we're able to meet all the intents of this requirement. The next one shows our request to reduce the ground floor height from 15 feet to 14 feet per 710. This elevation shows how the site slopes pretty dramatically from the northwest corner to the southwest corner. We have 14 feet just right at the corner, but then we have a perceived elevation of 22 feet for the base on the southwest corner. Try to run through quickly. The next one are the building setbacks. Because we're required to have 8-foot building setback at those stoop elevations, we have very tight units here. We feel like an extra 6 inches will help us achieve livability within those units. The next one is the street frontage. We're looking to provide on-site loading due to the sloping nature of the site.
That's your time, but how much more do you need for your presentation?
Okay, thank you. I need to introduce Smitha, who's the VP of Bridge Housing. We wanted to make some comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Smitha Seshadri. I oversee development at Bridge Housing for Northern California. Bridge was established in San Francisco in 1983, and over the past 40 years, we've delivered nearly 2,500 affordable units in 23 properties in San Francisco. This represents the largest number of our portfolio of nearly 15,000 housing units. Our developments provide much-needed housing for working families and seniors who continue to be priced out of the historically expensive housing market in San Francisco at a faster rate with each passing year. Our mission is to prevent displacement of low-income families in San Francisco and strengthen communities. With significant financial support from the state, we are really excited to be finally able to proceed with construction at the Balboa Reservoir site, slated to deliver 1,100 housing units and infrastructure, including open spaces. Building A will include 159 of the 550 affordable units at the site. We are working towards starting construction for Building E in July this year. Buildings E and A together will deliver 287 of the 550 affordable units at Balboa Reservoir. Your approval of our request today will allow us to successfully apply for tax credits for Building A to the state in May of this year and start construction in early 2026. I truly appreciate your support. Thank you.
Sorry, that was the sponsor presentation. We should now open up public comment.
My name is Heta Tima. I'm a resident of Westwood Park, which borders right onto the fence of this project, which is a very sizable project, as you can imagine. And we are all concerned because we think that more than 3,000 people will come into our neighborhood. We know there is a great need for housing in San Francisco. And we have, for 10 years, tried to inform you and ask you, and especially the supervisors of San Francisco, to get emergency water supply to the west and south of San Francisco. We are totally under there is not enough water supply should we have an emergency. And if you remember the 1906 earthquake, it was not the earthquake which was so damaging, it was the fire which was so damaging. And when you remember 1989, the earthquake in the marina with the fire, if we wouldn't have had flexible hoses going to the bay, we would have had tremendous damage, a fire damage. For more than 10 years, we have tried to let the city know that they should start with providing emergency water supply, and nothing has happened. Those construction firms are planning to put 3,000 people into the area beyond the students of the city college. What will happen if we have a great disaster? It should be cared for, it should be looked after. You are responsible for this. I hold you all responsible.
Any additional public comment? Last call for public comment. Seeing none, public comment is closed. This matter is now before you, commissioners.
Vice President Moore.
You wonder why I pulled the project from consent. This project is so exceptional that I believe that my fellow commissioners need to hear the whole story. The building itself is interesting, but you understand it much better when you see it in context, particularly at the time when the majority of projects we are approving never appear for the next 10, 20 years. And here we are, this was approved in 2020, while there was time to build up to community consent, et cetera, conceptual planning. This is a remarkable project on all and every front. There is nothing wrong, so there are no challenges to the request for modified guideline approval, nothing of that. Only an appreciation on a broad, broad level for all architects, for all community, for everybody who have been involved, particularly singling out Mr. Horn, who has actually attending to this project now for an extensively long time, and saying, we actually can do this. We can, in a large context, bring 159 affordable units right at the front end. And I want San Clemente to hear that, and I want everybody else to hear that. This is not we can't do, we can. What I think is exceptionally noteworthy is the fact that the guidelines are very challenging. Anybody who takes these guidelines to a complicated site will have a real uphill battle to meet the subtleties of what's implied here. This is designed with a large vision. And I commend the architect for having as few challenges, there are actually two architectural firms involved, to meet all the challenges of the subtleties of what's implied here. And it's not only asking for exceptions, but finding ways to meet the guidelines in an even more creative interpretation. Mm-hmm. So if it's not the width or the height of an opening, you can make up by challenging and modifying height or width in order to still have the same effect. This is perhaps a little technical comment, but I think I wanted to just have everybody enjoy the depths and the success of this project, and including the mayor's office for workforce and economic development to be able to get state funding, which hopefully will still exist as we move into the future so that we can realize additional projects of this depth. There are quite a few others hanging out who would like to start, but this one is amazing and it has my full support. Thank you.
Commissioner Imperio.
Thank you. Thank you, Vice President Moore, for pulling this out of consent. And thank you, Mr. Horn, in presenting this. In terms of looking into the guidelines, and I appreciate that this taking out of consent, even though the guidelines or the modifications are minor, in my sense as well, it does need to be understood by the Commission in terms of what are the modifications being changed. And, you know, first, I think one of the modification on the offloading, I'm glad that, you know, that there's a path in a way that it doesn't also reduce the affordable housing units. And so I appreciate that and still bringing it to the Commission in terms of the updates on what's being changed. And I think it really deserves for the Commission to hear it in full. So in that, and also just for the comment, you know, this project has been in the works for the last 10 years or so. And so, you know, there is a lot of anticipation really in building these projects, especially when it comes to affordable housing units. And it has been vetted in so many ways, many times with the community about the design, about the affordability, also the total of market units. So I think this has been looked in extensively. So in that sense, I would like to make a motion to approve, and looks like Commissioner Williams would also say something.
Second.
Thank you. I like to emphasize that I'm really delighted to see that when Jonathan mentioned that this project will be able to start breaking ground and start construction as early as in a couple of months. And thank you, Bridge Housing, and thank you, the whole planning team and design architecture team. Really excited about this. This is not just constructing just these two buildings. It is enabling the entire site and groundwork to lay out all the horizontal infrastructures that are paving the path for future buildings to be easier to start building up. So I am personally really excited to see this happening, and I would like to know when is the groundbreaking ceremony. If you just email me at some point. Thank you. This is exciting to get the state funding and really seeing it hitting the ground in this year. So thank you. And thank you for taking your time to be here today. And I will pass it on to my Commissioner Williams for more comments.
Thank you. Yeah, I just want to, you know, thank everyone that's been involved in this project. This project has been going on in this area for a long time. I live in District 11, and you know, very familiar with the area and all the people that have been involved, all the community activation. This project has brought communities together, and I think that's a great thing. Not only that, but it's going to provide over 500 affordable housing units, which is a real win for San Francisco. And so, and just sitting up here, you know, thinking about affordable housing and the great need that we have, it's very gratifying to be, you know, sit here and see something like this coming to fruition, especially, you know, given I spent big portion of my life in this area. And I know how great and how many people it's going to affect in a positive way. And so, you know, can't say enough. Thanks for the mayor's office of the OEWD for doing all their work. I know it's a big lift getting all the financing and all the pieces together for a project this size. And I'm grateful. Thank you. That's all I wanted to say. And I'm fine with the changes.
Question.
There's no further deliberation, commissioners. There is a motion that has been seconded to approve. With conditions, or no, just to approve. On that motion, Commissioner Campbell?
Aye.
Commissioner McGarry?
Aye.
Commissioner Williams?
Aye.
Commissioner Braun?
Aye.
Commissioner Imperial?
Aye.
Commissioner Moore?
Aye.
Commission President So?
Aye.
So moved, commissioners. That concludes your very brief agenda today.
That was great. I'm so happy.
We don't clap.